John, thanks a lot for joining us. What was the reaction to Major League Baseball or on the part of Major League Baseball to the offer from Montreal? And do we know who extended the offer?
We don't know at this point in time exactly who made the phone call or extended the offer. I think we'd both probably agree it was likely some of the folks that have been involved in the effort to bring baseball back to Montreal and that are really in the last couple of years established a pretty strong relationship with MLB, just in their conversations. And I think MLB in general has been very impressed by what the people of Montreal have put together in terms of the business community and the potential ownership group there if baseball ever does return there in the future. And I think that one thing that we've noticed as well is that obviously there were some logistical reasons why St. Petersburg made more sense for baseball to go with the Astros games this week, but that MLB was very pleased with what Montreal said and the overall presentation of it, and they were appreciative of it. And I think it's just indicative of one more step, I suppose, in their journey of maybe eventually getting a team back there, just to show that goodwill and to have a favorable response from New York once that request was made.
And of course, there's a little bit of irony here in that the Montreal Expos had to finish out one season on the road, playing some all their games on the road as a result of the collapse of a 50-ton beam at Olympic Stadium. So there's a little bit of irony here insofar as that goes. We know the Astros are going back to Houston. We also know, John, that in the past, whenever Major League Baseball has run up against whether it's a natural disaster or, in the case of 9/11, man-made disasters, we also know that the first concern, it's not just can we get our players there, can we get our fans there, it's do we want to force a city to divert resources away from the important task of saving lives and protecting property by having a baseball game there. And knowing Rob Manfred as we do, I think it's pretty safe to say that he would be very sensitive to this situation. Are you a little surprised that the Astros are being allowed to play those games in Houston? I mean, I know it's going to be great. Look, it's got to be great for the morale of the city. And again, I don't think anybody would do this if there was any chance that it was going to interfere with the recovery effort. But I was a little surprised, weren't you?
Well, Jeff, if you had asked me that 2 days ago, I would have said I was very surprised. But yesterday, I did get the sense, yesterday morning, in talking to people that were involved in the decision, that there were some positive signs that had been happening in Houston, and specifically that the area around the ballpark, as the Astros had tweeted out from their Twitter account on, I believe it was now Tuesday night, the fact that largely the flooding had abated in that immediate area, and there was not really any damage done to the ballpark itself. So once you knew the ballpark was in good shape, and there were photos of the George Brown Convention Center downtown, which is actually, as we know, downtown Houston, is just basically two blocks southwest of Minute Maid Park, is now really a temporary shelter for victims of Hurricane Harvey. So they're living there, and that area is largely devoid of flooding as well. So that specific part of downtown is in decent shape, and I think that's probably the rationale of why those games are played, that the immediate area there is passable, and you can get there and you can move around that area. The question that I would have, and I think that this is sort of I think a very dynamic situation, and that it's changing probably by the hour, is where fans will be able to come from logistically, from a standpoint of which roads are open. I believe that the plan was for Bush Intercontinental Airport to be opened again here shortly, I believe this morning, once the floodwaters were expected to recede around the airport. That was one of the reasons why it was hard for people to get in and out of town, and even for the team to get back, because the airport was closed because the roads around it were not passable. So I think that's the separate discussion of, I think that area of downtown is good, but as we know, the devastation is so far-reaching, and I'm sure there are going to be some fans that just simply cannot get to the games if they wanted to, because their immediate environment is not passable. So it's going to be, I'm sure, Jeff, a very emotional day on Saturday with a doubleheader, and I'm just wondering from a standpoint of turnout, how many people will be able to get down there. Again, I'm confident in that area of town that it's going to be safe and accessible for people to get there, and certainly they would not have moved the games there if that wasn't the case. I'm just curious to see how many fans are able to get there just based on the logistics and some of the thoroughfares that we're seeing in the city being in obviously very, very dire circumstances over the last couple of days.
John, another interesting little item, the New York Daily News reporting today and some other outlets as well, but the New York Daily News sort of the first place I saw it at least, that Brian Cashman, the general manager of the Yankees, and Gene Afterman, his assistant general manager, are both in Japan to watch Shohei Ohtani. He's scheduled to pitch, I believe, today. He may have already pitched. I'm not clear on the timing of the of that particular game, but that they've gone down to watch him pitch and play. Now, we know under the new CBA, Ohtani will make more money if he waits before he a couple of years before he signs, or before he makes himself available and before he signs. But what is your read on what he may be thinking? And what his team may be thinking in Japan. And I'm wondering if maybe he and his people aren't looking at next year's free agent class and factoring that into their decision about when they make the move to North America. And we, you know, the Yankees would appear to be, I mean, look, they've signed Japanese players before. I know, as you've mentioned on the air, they've sort of quietly gone about assembling international bonus pool money as well in a variety of trades. Do you think there's a chance that the Yankees may end up going very hard after him?
I do. And the accumulation of international signing bonus money, Jeff, is not an accident in my judgment. This is something that they would like to do if they can. And there's a lot going on here with Ohtani. First and foremost, he did pitch today. Ken Rosenthal reporting in the last hour or so from a scout that was there, that he was, velocity-wise, he was 94 to 100 with spotty fastball command, but appeared healthy. So that was a very good sign for him. So, again, that's according to Ken Rosenthal. I talked to Shohei Ohtani earlier this year about where he was at and what his interests are. He is very curious about MLB. He wants to be both a pitcher and hitter in MLB if he can.
Mm-hmm.
And his manager, Hideki Koriyama, told me earlier this year when I spoke to him that even though it certainly benefits the club, in this case the Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters, to keep Ohtani for another couple of years, that because of his service to the team to this point in time, that if Ohtani comes to the club after the season is over and says to them, I want to go to Major League Baseball, I'm ready for it, and I would like your blessing to do so, that the team, again, according to the manager, would say, go chase your dreams. That's what they would say. That was the message that I was given from the manager. Now, a couple things have happened since then. Ohtani's had an injury-plagued season, and the team has struggled. And as Jason Koskrie has pointed out from the Japan Times, typically when players are posted, it's a very interesting dynamic. Usually, in almost every case in recent years, it has happened following a season in which the player's team has performed well. In other words, that the player feels as though there was honor given and an overall positive effort conveyed to the team in what was a very successful season, that by living up to that obligation to help the team win, the player has in some way earned the right to seek his dream in Major League Baseball. That's obviously a very unique cultural aspect of Japanese baseball and Japanese society, and that is something that certainly has to be respected in this overall conversation, that if they feel as though this was not the proper season on which to leave, that he may in fact decide to stay one more year. And of course, as you point out, Jeff, there are also financial incentives for him to wait two more years because then he could be a total free agent.
Right.
But the overall sense that I got from speaking to Shohei Ohtani that day and just in everything that's been said about him before and since is that he wants the challenge. Mm-hmm. And that if he comes to the U.S. or comes to Toronto and pitches in Major League Baseball and achieves on a level that he believes he will, he'll make his money eventually anyway. That having to accept a lower signing bonus, while not ideal, is a mere entry point to what he believes will be a very lucrative career, as long as he follows in the footsteps of someone who is his idol, and that's Yu Darvish.
Yeah, I find it fascinating, too, because, you know, when you spend any time around the Yankees, and I spend a little bit of time around them in spring training, look, I'm like a lot of people. I think that the Yankees are going to end up with Manny Machado or Bryce Harper when they become free agents, but there is a school of thought out there that Brian Cashman is relatively happy with sort of the cost-effective nature of his young players, and in point of fact, he may decide to surprise people and maybe look at investing elsewhere. Shohei Ohtani would certainly fit that bill, and of course, I would imagine there'd always be a chance that if somehow Giancarlo Stanton is ever in the market, the Yankees would be interested in there. But I mean, I keep being told by people in the game not to fall in the trap of just automatically assuming that Harper and Machado are going to be with the Yankees.
Well, very good point. And there's certainly a lot going on with both of those players, especially now with Harper's health and the injury he sustained this year. And Mark Zuckerman reporting right now at MassinSports.com that there is now some uncertainty about just how ready he is going to be for the playoffs. He's not yet, according to Dusty Baker, not yet close to running right now on that bone bruise that he sustained on his leg. So that's concerning for the Washington Nationals. And Jeff, as you know, Harper has been a guy whose value has fluctuated wildly, whether due to health, whether due to production. There are times where he's had months and even seasons when he has looked like the best player on the planet, when he's looked like he's even better than Mike Trout. And then there have been times when he scuffled, as he did in the second half last year, and then more recently with the injury, where there are legitimate concerns about his durability. And when you think to yourself, is a team really going to spend $300, $400 million to sign Bryce Harper? Mm-hmm. And Manny Machado, frankly, was a similar case this year. Early in the season, he really struggled. Well, in the month of August, he's been one of the 10 best players in the game, according to Wins Above Replacement at Fangraphs.com. So they're both very interesting cases. And like you, Jeff, I am not going to assume anything about where they're going to sign, aside from the fact that I think there's going to be a lot of really entertaining stories to be written in the off season of 18-19, once all these players are up for free agency, because of just the sheer amount of talent that's out there. And also, as we know, Josh Donaldson, potentially right, a free agent that off season. Andrew McCutchen, also a free agent that offseason. So we've got a lot of great storylines coming up, and really, I think, a departure from recent years in which maybe the truly elite players have largely not hit free agency because they've been signing extensions. The winner of 18-19 will be quite the different story.
The story around here yesterday, I guess it was destined to be the case, Troy Tulowitzki held a media availability, something that doesn't always happen. He was asked about his rehabilitation from his ankle injury, and it is going to be an arduous process. I also asked him about, you know, the continued dialogue or the continued discussion in the game that, because of his age and because of the injuries, he's recorded at some point, he may not be this organization's preferred choice at shortstop. And at some point, a position change may be either called for or suggested. John, he made pretty clear that he's going to finish his career as a shortstop for a variety of reasons. I don't know if that necessarily comes as a surprise to anybody. But we're looking at a guy who signed through 2021. Even if the Jays exercise that $4 million option in 2021, he's still due roughly $84 million over the next however many seasons before he becomes a free agent. Your best guess, what happens to Troy Tulowitzki?
Great question, Jeff. There are so many different possibilities here. I believe that he'll be a Blue Jay because obviously it's difficult to trade a player who's in his 30s and is injured unless there's a swap of similar contracts. I think he'll have at least one more season as the shortstop. And then I would imagine by about 2019, he's probably playing a different position. I think that's about where I think it's going to go. I think that he probably deserves one last chance to stay healthy, to show that he can stay healthy and play that position. But, Jeff, as you know, that's a difficult spot to play as you get older, and it's difficult to do so on turf, especially when you're a bigger body frame shortstop, which is what he is. I'd be curious to know, and this is certainly something I'll research, and I'm sure we'll talk about it a lot in the coming months, is how many shortstops who are that tall are playing 140 games a year at that position when they're 34, 35, 36 years old. I can't imagine there are many. A key thing to Derek Jeter's durability, and certainly Derek is Troy's idol, Derek's body frame and his overall athleticism really did not change that much until the very end. If you took a snapshot photo of him and the way his body looked, and just the lean muscle that Derek has always had, the way his body looked at age 26 and the way he looked at 36, they were almost indistinguishable. He just kept himself in that great of shape, and just his body composition was such that he was able to remain that light on his feet type of an athlete. And Troy's just built differently. He's a little taller, a little thicker, and obviously he's in phenomenal shape for the most part, when he's healthy at least. But it's not the same body type. I think it's harder to be on the field at that level. It's more of an A-Rod type body, more of a Ripken type body, and both of them finished their careers at third base. Mm-hmm. So these are, and I'm sure, conversations the Jays are having right now, but the turf is a factor, the body type is a factor, and the turf and the body type, to me, are two major considerations that didn't really exist for Derek Jeter, his idol, and why Derek's career may be unfolded in a particular way and why Troy's career may not. And I think that the Donaldson factor is there. I think certainly next year, barring a trade, which I don't think is terribly likely, but barring a trade, Josh Donaldson is going to be the Jays' third baseman next year, and so third base is somewhat spoken for. But then by the time, if Donaldson leaves as a free agent after next season, you may have some combination of Vlad Jr. and Bo Bichette coming around, and then they may be playing the infield. And so then that may cause a different set of circumstances. And I still think, even though, could you move Bo Bichette, could you move Vlad Jr., could you move Tulo to a different spot? Yes, you could do all those different things. I still believe that the length and the amount of money on Tulo's contract and the potential arrivals of Bichette and Vlad Jr. are going to have some bearing on exactly where the Jays put their offer in to Josh Donaldson on an extension. I think it has to. Mm-hmm. You have to be aware of the overall roster construction. And even though those players are very far away at this point in time, Jeff, I think it at least is going to be a decision by the time the 2019 season rolls around, which would be the first year of an extension for Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, it's, you know, I guess the worst case scenario for the Jays, quite frankly, is that this turns into another Scott Rowland situation where a guy very quietly goes to management and says, look, I don't want to play on turf anymore, and I know that the field is different now than it was when Scott was here. But that a guy goes very quietly to management and says, you know, I'd like you guys to examine a trade elsewhere. I mean, it's one thing to trade a guy with, what, $15 million left in his contract. Another thing to trade a guy with $64 million in this climate.
Right.
Like this is, you know, and look, I understand why Alex Anthopoulos made this deal when he did, and I don't think anybody would take away the last two playoff appearances. But, I mean, I think back to when that deal was made, and there were people in this organization who said, hey, this is, you know, this is a tough contract. This is a worse contract in Herrett than Vernon Wells' contract was. That's going to be a lot harder to move this because, you know, Vernon Wells, frankly, at the time the Jays moved him, he was a better player than Troy Tulowitzki is right now. And it's going to be a tough decision for this organization.
Very good point. And Jeff, you wonder too, and this is where I think it's so important to have these conversations about the way that the overall payroll structure fits. If there's no Tulo contract, and again, I'm with you, I think it's wise to remember, even though his power hasn't quite been there, and even though his really overall offensive profile has not been as strong as what the Jays probably thought they were getting when they traded for him back in 2015, he was still very integral to the last two playoff runs. So it's important to set that aside. But if there's no Tulo contract, do the Jays make a bit of a more aggressive offer last winter to Encarnacion, and is Edwin still a Blue Jay right now?
Mm-hmm.
All these dollars are part of the overall tapestry, if you will, of their payroll, and you wonder if at what point in time would the overall offer in the course of discussions with Edwin have changed a bit, and might he still be a Blue Jay? Because as we well know, he turned down more from the Jays than he eventually signed for with the Indians, and now of course it looks like he's certainly on his way to the playoffs for a third straight year, and maybe even a World Series. So it's going to be a very interesting conversation to look at the Jays' payroll, how the young talent fits into this, and also, of course, what they have to do on the pitching side of things, because they have some tough decisions to make there with the rotation and the bullpen as well, entering next year, as well as what has been this season, Jeff, the oldest position player group of any team in Major League Baseball. And so that's where the health component comes in, and where, on a certain level, the Jays cannot simply shrug their shoulders and say, well, we had a lot of injuries in 2017. We think we'll be more fortunate in 2018. That's not the case if you've got the oldest team in the majors among position players. Older players are much more likely to get hurt. We know that that's a fact of baseball. And so unless the Jays make some real fundamental changes to the makeup of their team from an offensive standpoint, they're going to have the same level of injuries next year, I believe.